Heather.
And I'm Brittany.
We are the okayest moms, but we're also creatives, businesswomen, and best friends.
This podcast was created as a community for the modern mom.
We know you're doing your best despite the conflicting messages that you aren't doing it as well as someone else.
We believe in self-care, mom friends as our sanity, and that motherhood looks different for everyone.
Most of all, we believe that you are more than just mom.
So join us as we talk about a range of topics from motherhood to frivolous reality TV and everything in between.
Welcome to the Okayest Moms podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Okayest Moms, the podcast. Heather here along with Brittany.
Hey.
All right. So today we are talking about news and how we get the news, how we came to trust those sources, and some of the sources that we follow and trust too.
Don't turn the episode off. It's not going to be boring. Promise.
Why would anybody think that?
Listen, we know it can be overwhelming and it's much easier to just shut it all off and ignore the world. I think we've both been there.
If anything, I feel like it's getting harder to do that, especially in the last few weeks. It's been really, I think you have to actively try to avoid any kind of news.
Oh, totally.
Is a problem in and of itself that we will get into.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I feel like if you try to actively avoid it, you're still getting little hits of it. And that's much more overwhelming than like a pointed, conscious effort to read it or know about it.
Okay, so the first half of the episode will be Brittany and I talking about various news sources we trust and how we've come to use them. And the second half will be an interview with Jennifer Sullivan of The Middle.
All right, let's dive in, huh?
All right, so what does news consumption look like for you?
Well, if you would have asked me pre 2015, it would have been very little, only the major headlines, because that's really all that mattered in my life then. Ever since I really started getting more into politics and knowing what was going on in the world when Donald Trump was elected, and it all just felt very important then.
Yeah. That's funny that you mentioned that you kind of started watching in 2015, because when I was preparing for this episode, I started thinking about how I came to get in my news routine. And I have been watching the news every morning since I was in high school. There's something about, like, I have to know what's happening, and I'm very nosy. I need to know things. And every morning I would watch the Today Show as I was eating my breakfast in the mornings. And I remember being awake on 9/11, because we're on the West Coast. And so as we were waking up, things had already happened. And I remember watching that and feeling like, I mean, honestly, not really knowing what to feel or think, but knowing that this was important and that the fact that I was watching it happen was also important. I didn't really know like how to process that, and I remember knowing before my parents did. And I don't know, like there was just like something about that for me that was like, oh, this is why people pay attention. Like then you know what's happening, and then you can get other people interested in to know what's happening too. So that's kind of always been part of my routine. In college, I kind of dropped off because I didn't care about anything then.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of where I was at. Actually, now that you said that, I do remember growing up in the morning, always having like Good Morning America on or the Today Show. And yeah, that's news too, obviously. But I wasn't as invested in it, I guess, and then that's part of growing up too, I think.
Right. Well, yeah, I was certainly in it for like the later hours of the Today Show when, you know, like the fluffier parts. And actually, even when I started staying home, when Isla was a newborn, like that was part of my routine every day. The Today Show would be on in the background. And I mean, because that was really like my only view into the outside world. Like, what is happening outside of this house? I need to know.
Those were friends when you had
an Yeah. Well, and it's, I mean, it's, this sounds like really dumb, but Savannah Guthrie was pregnant the same time I was pregnant with Isla. And so she was, she had a new, like, we were at the same stage. So it, I mean, she kind of was my friend.
I remember that. Yes. Cause I was pregnant with Sullivan.
Yeah. So, I mean, it, you really do like come to know these people and trust them. And even today, so my news now is kind of moved from the morning to the evening. So now my routine is every night while I'm starting to cook dinner, you know, like while we're like winding down from the day, I'll turn the news on. And even my kids now know, like, oh, mom, are you going to put the news on? So, but yeah, so that's just part of my routine. And I'm still watching NBC because here locally, I think that's the most accurate and trustworthy news source for our local news. And so I kind of just roll into the national nightly news from there, and that's it.
Well, you mentioned you do the local NBC station. What other sources do you use throughout your daily life?
So in the last couple years, I've also gotten into NPR, which really just like felt like a huge blow to my ego. To just listen to talk radio in the car just feels like I'm a grandma, because my grandma listened to talk radio in the car constantly. So here I am. But I've actually really come to love it. And I also laugh every time they say one of their reporters' names, because the SNL skits are just spot on, because their names are always so ridiculous. So we have Alexas in our home. And one thing I've done is you can set routines on your Alexa. I'm going to stop saying that in case I'm setting anybody's off. So you can set a routine. So every morning I say, Alexa, play the flash briefing, and she'll run down the top NPR headlines. Actually, it's like an NPR podcast made for Alexa. And so they run through the big headlines, and then I have it set to then tell me the weather. And then I have it set to play NPR's Up First, which you can also get as a podcast on iTunes. So I am not a person that can hop out of bed and like be ready for the day. I need like a good 15, 20 minutes of just like laying in bed in the dark without my glasses on, like blindly, like literally blind. And so I listen to that to kind of like wake me up, which is probably not the best way to start your day, but also it's gotten a lot better.
I have something similar that I do, not on Alexa, but the Newsworthy podcast. I have it on my Spotify. It's the first thing I listen to after I drop the kids off on the way home. And it's like 10 to 15 minutes of like the top headlines and a little bit of blurb about it. Very center, very fact-driven, and that's what starts my day off.
Yeah, that sounds really similar to Up First. It's like a quick 10 to 15 minute thing. And one thing I've really come to love about NPR is that it's more of a worldwide perspective. A couple weeks ago, or maybe, I don't know, sometime in the past, there was a protest in India of the farm workers, and it was a huge deal in India. And there's a fairly large Indian community where we live, and I had kind of seen bits and pieces of it. But really, NPR was the only place I was hearing anything about that. I didn't hear it on any local channels, any national news. NPR was really the only place talking about this. So you really do get a broader perspective, which I appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a real problem with our journalism in America. It's very U.S. centric, and we're part of a global community, and that hasn't been made more clear with this pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really, I'm glad you pointed that out.
Well, and yeah, that's a good point too. So I've been doing this kind of morning routine for at least a year, because I like heard of COVID like coming. And I think that's probably partly why my anxiety peaked very early because I was hearing all about it. But also I think that it gave me a really, like a real perspective about the damage this could do and where this was probably going to go and the havoc it was going to create. Whereas a lot of people around me were blissfully unaware, which is, I mean, that's a great place to be, but also it's very unrealistic and probably part of the reason why our response has been so different than other countries. So yeah, knowing what's going on around the world is very important.
Sometimes joke that I wish I could just be blissfully unaware.
I honestly, I'm envious. I truly, truly am jealous. It is not my personality at all to just bury my head in the sand. I must know. I must know everything. I really wish I wasn't that way.
So another news source that I've really come to love is the Axios Top 10. It's a newsletter that I get every morning, and it's written by Mike Allen, who is the founder of Axios, and they are a very center news organization, and it's 10 stories that matter, and the way it's set up, even at the beginning, it tells you like how many words it is and about how long it'll take you to read it, and it's usually like 4 to 6 minutes, and it's the top 10 stories in the world that matter, and they're broken down by what it is, why it matters, and then the big picture of like what this means for the world. And I really enjoy it. And it's the first thing I read in my email every morning.
I hate reading news. I hate it. That's why I watch it or I listen. I can't, it's just so, I don't know.
Something honestly, this would be good for you then, because it's so quick, it's bullet points, and there are pictures when it warrants it.
Okay. I don't know. Just like, I want somebody to read it to me because I want to like be doing other things while I'm taking it in. You know what I mean?
Such a multitasker.
I can't like sit and read. That's why I don't read as much as I would like, because I just can't focus to sit. It's just easier to me to be doing, cause I mean like when I'm cooking dinner while I'm watching or yeah. Kids are always around me. Like to sit and like read something, I feel like I'm more likely to be distracted. Although I very rarely hear every word of my Alexa reading to me either. So, which brings up a good point I wanted to ask. How do you approach kids and news? Like are they consuming any of this?
I was always very careful not to have the news on when they were younger. I just read so many things about like, you know, they're taking it in even if they don't know how to ask questions about it. Now they're old enough where when they hear or see something, they will ask, and I'll be honest with them. And I mean, I feel like I'm very open and honest with them anyway, but with things going on in the world, if they have questions, then I answer them now. And I do watch more news in front of them, especially this past year.
Yeah. So I'm one of those kids who remembers the news being on all the time and taking it in and not really knowing what to do with that information. But I also think it made me more aware of other things. I think it gave me more of a historical context for some things, some events, like especially going through school, learning about history and government and politics and things like that. It kind of gave me a reference of patterns that we see and things like that. So I was hesitant at first to have the news on in front of the kids, but I don't know. I'm still torn about it. I mean, I still do it every night, but also like watching Isla now, who's six, she kind of like pays attention when the weather's on because that's of interest to her. And so now she knows like, oh, it's Wednesday and it's, oh mom, it might rain today, so I should maybe put my boots on or, you know, something like that. I think it's giving them a good tool to learn how to be a citizen in our community, in this world, to know they're seeing things that I wouldn't be able to show them outside. I mean, especially right now when we're not even really going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they see other kids, I know the nightly news on NBC has been doing a kids broadcast, which is kind of cool because then they're talking about it in kids terms with other kids that they're seeing. So I mean, there are certainly things and days where I don't turn it on purpose. But also like on January 6th, when the insurrection was happening and Nolan was home with me, I didn't really want him watching that, but I needed him to know that he was not getting a turn on the TV because this was important and I needed to know what was happening. So I did send him upstairs with his iPad so that he wasn't like taking this in live with me. But also like I was getting the point across to him that there are certain things that happen in this world that are going to make you stop and pay attention and change your day.
Yeah, totally. I like that part of it. Especially with my kids, I think everything's boring right now. But like when the election was on, we made a big deal about it. Like at this time, it's going on and we're going to watch it. This is a big deal for the country. So I hope like things like that will stick out in their mind as opposed to like the everyday, you know, news cycle.
For sure. And I think that's why I'm more civically minded is because I grew up with grandparents and parents who did watch election results roll in and did, you know, kind of keep up with the news cycle and were involved and had opinions about things. And I learned how to make those opinions and discuss them openly. And that I saw my family members disagreeing and that was okay. And I don't know. I think it's just a really good jumping off point to, and yes, they're not going to understand everything that's going on. And I think that's okay. I think that as you make these patterns with them and like model all these things, I think they make sense of it eventually.
Yeah. And that's what you're for, to answer their questions and guide them along the way, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, like when the pandemic hit, I don't know how else I would have explained it to my kids if they weren't hearing about it on the news, because
right.
I don't know how the hell to explain that. So it's a way for them to draw my kids' questions out who aren't, I mean, they talk constantly and ask a million questions, but they're not necessarily inclined to ask questions that way.
What else do you do to get news?
So when I was thinking of where I'm getting my news, to me, the one thing that really stood out was like the conscious ways I'm consuming news, you know, turning the TV on, turning the radio station, physically playing the Up First podcast, things like that. But I realize that there's also these unconscious ways that I'm getting news. And they're ways that I probably would have scoffed at 5 years ago because they're not official. But I think social media is really like a first source, like a primary source. Like remember back when we were writing our research papers and like, you know, you always wanted to go to the primary source. And I think this can be a slippery slope if you are new to news and information. You don't necessarily want to believe everybody on the internet, but I do think
No, please don't.
But I think as you become more comfortable consuming information, I think you know who is trustworthy and who is not. Of course, the other side of this coin is that you can make a very nice little echo chamber for yourself and only see what you want to see. But I'm thinking of things like back when the inauguration was happening and DC was super locked down, on TikTok I saw all kinds of people who lived in the district showing like, I have to get through this checkpoint to get from the market to my house. I'm out walking my dog and there's National Guard everywhere. One guy I saw on TikTok lives in Colorado and he went to Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene's office in Colorado, who is the representative that is a QAnon fan and has also been seen harassing Parkland shooting victims. And most recently, have you heard this, that she believes the California wildfires were set by Jews with high powered laser beams?
No one's talking about her.
So this woman has been elected to Congress. And so this guy on TikTok,
he ran unopposed, for the record.
So this guy in Colorado went to her office and she's basically moved out of her office and is hiding from constituents, which is, I think they're required to have like a public office to be reachable at. So like you are, on one hand, like you can't trust everybody, but on the other hand, like you're getting this like new guerrilla vigilante type news that we didn't get before, which, I mean, like, has its drawbacks for sure, but it also shapes your opinion. So
yeah, cameras on phones has been a game changer as far as keeping the public more informed and seeing things that have been happening for a long time. I mean, the George Floyd murder comes to mind. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, it has also created a nonstop barrage of information coming at you 24/7. And it is hard to differentiate what to trust and what to watch and what to spend your brain power on.
Right. And I think another event that comes to mind is the all too common active shooter. Twitter's a really good way to get information. But I think it's important to not take all of this social media news at face value. I think you have to kind of make an aggregate of it all. So like take this firsthand account and then take this official news source and kind of like, I hate to say make your own opinion, but because I think there's too much of that going on right now.
But, yeah, no, definitely pay attention to the facts though. Like what is true?
In right. Situation.
Yeah.
How about you?
So the person who comes to mind right away is at Sharon Says So, and she's on Instagram. She's America's government teacher. She presents facts, is very knowledgeable, and she's like a little quirky and funny. And I just think she's a really good follow. And it's really funny because people on the left have messaged her and said, you're definitely right leaning. You're not hiding it very well. And then people on the right have said that she's left leaning and she's not hiding it very well. I think she's very in the middle, doesn't throw her own biases. Is that the word? Biases into her work. I really enjoy that. She does a Q&A almost every day, and I just love it. She's great.
That is such a talent to be able to disguise your personal views so well, and she does it effortlessly.
Truly, truly. And she said something really that I have not stopped thinking about. Somebody was complaining about how the government never gets anything done. They're useless. And she made a point to say it is important for the government to be inefficient because that means that people on all sides are having debate and critiquing each other's opinions, which is important because you know who had a really efficient government? Hitler.
Yeah. So
the complaint now, because of course, like, we want all these things to go through Congress and we want, you know, big change and we want it to happen quickly. But if that were to happen, that would mean that one side would have much more power than the other. And that's exactly what we don't want in a democracy.
Yeah. It means the checks and balances are working.
Yeah. So that gave me a whole perspective shift.
Yeah. Which I think we all need right now.
Do you have anything else?
So a couple others that I have found. So I found Smart Her News
on
Instagram right around the time the pandemic was starting. And she is also an independent journalist who's created her own platform, I guess you would call it. Yeah, so I found her right around the time the pandemic started. And she also had, at that time, like, I just related to her so much because she had kids newly at home and she was also trying to drink out of the same fire hose we were all drinking out of and to like make sense of everything. And again, another source that it's these people who are just like funneling information and putting it into easier to digest terms, which is something I appreciate right now. Another one I found recently, which is not necessarily news. It's more of like an opinion piece of news. It's Pete Souza. His handle is at Pete Souza. So he was the White House photographer for President Obama and President Reagan. And there's a fantastic documentary about him on CNN. He has a book that he wrote about photographing Obama. And so what he's done over the last 4 years and is continuing to do. So he takes a picture that he shot on that day and kind of what he was doing this last 4 years was juxtaposing it against what was currently happening. And I mean, he's snarky as hell and his his views are very evident. And but it's just, he also provides a good historical context for things. And I just, I'm appreciating it. So
I love him.
The other one that came to mind too, which is kind of different. I can't remember. This is one I couldn't remember the handle for. It's like Stuff You Should Care About or Stuff You Should Know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. On Instagram. Shit You Should Care About.
Yes, that's it. And I believe they're an Australian source. So I think that's interesting too. That brings up another point. It's good to know where your news is coming from. But I love non-Americans' opinions of Americans. And I think that the way they present the information is very digestible. So
yeah, we're a visual creature.
Yes.
I also want to bring up the point that I think this is not something I have been good at in the past, but I think supporting independent journalism is important. Putting money toward those people that you consume content from, and that way I just think it's important to put money toward journalism in general so that we can get the whole story.
So that we don't live in like North Korea.
Right. That's what I'm trying to say.
So I don't currently pay for any news. And here's my hesitation with that. I think that, and I agree with you, but I think the more you pay for it, the more you get what you want. And that's kind of what I'm trying to avoid. I'm like really trying to make a conscious effort to diversify my sources. And I mean, obviously, if you do your research and you pick a good one, I think you can avoid that. But it just makes me nervous.
You mean like on social media?
Paying for some kind of subscription or something. I mean, I guess there's a difference between supporting an independent journalist and getting a subscription to Mother Jones or something.
Right. Yes, totally. So like, for example, Sharon Says So, she does Government for Grownups and has these courses or these live Zooms where she answers questions and has like a government class for grownups, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Or like How Can't Suit Politics does their Patreon for their like, what do they call them? The Nightly Nuance or
Yes, yes, exactly. That's another good one. I didn't think of that. I just recently got a monthly subscription to allsidesnow.com, and we follow their Instagram, and they do a really great job of taking headlines from the left, the center, and the right, and juxtaposing them together so you can see the contrast, and it's really fascinating. And their monthly subscription is $2.99 a month, and you get access to all the news on their website. So that's my, I'm working toward paying for good journalism.
Got it. Yeah. And then, we'll be talking to Jen in a minute, who is the founder of The Middle, which is another paid journalism source. So how are you making sure that you are diversifying? Or do you ever venture over on purpose?
I have been trying to take in more news from the center. Having bias isn't synonymous with lying.
Right. And I think those things are minced often.
Yes. And so I will happily read a biased article as long as it's filled with facts. But if it comes to like those extreme news sites where it is literally fabricated information, no, I will not read that.
One thing I really enjoy doing, I did this a lot during the election when the results were coming in. I did it on January 6th. I did it a little on Inauguration Day. Just flip over to Fox and just see what they're saying. And it's funny because daytime Fox and nighttime Fox are two very different things. And I find myself watching the daytime Fox and like, how do people, where are you mixing these things up? I'm listening to this and seeing it and this looks fine. And then, you know, you turn on Tucker Carlson and you're like, oh, Yeah, but I think it is important to flip over every once in a while and just you know, take it in. Just observe. Be a fly on the wall. My takeaway is boomers have ruined the internet.
Do you have any other... Oh, you mentioned pantsuit politics. We should talk about them.
Yes, so I just found them recently. I know they've been around doing good things for a long time. They do a fantastic job of being transparent about their views and their stances. And I commend Beth for challenging herself and changing her views, because I know that's a very hard thing to do. And I just love them. They say everything I am thinking in a much better way. And I love them.
Yeah. Their political conversations are just the deep dive I need to sort out my thoughts a lot of the time. Because a lot of these big issues and news events are super hard to process if you don't, you know, if you don't know the whole story, number one, and number two, if there are emotions involved. And yeah, they just do a really, really good job, I think.
Sure. Another one, another podcast I love that I get a lot of my news from is Pod Save America, which is very left-leaning and...
No.
More than that. I mean, like, what's more than leaning? Like, they're like...
Left. They are left.
They are staunchly camped out in the left. Yeah. But I think that's okay to listen to people that agree with you too, because they are doing it in a way that's not trying to rally and radicalize and incite. They're just processing information. Mm-hmm. And I don't ever feel like I need to storm a Capitol building after I listen to it.
Again, bias is not synonymous with lies.
Correct. Yes. But I think you do need to be conscious of like how many of where your bias is coming from. There's a really great graphic that's been floating around the internet showing where different sources land. I think I'll try and find it and link it. Yeah. So, I mean, just to be, and not to make it's that things are bad that you're getting, I mean, unless you're getting it from OAN, that's bad.
Well, there's also, I need to look for this, but there is a graphic where it has the bias everywhere from far left to far right, but then it also falls on how, on the, what is it, y-axis, how many lies,
or yeah,
like the percentage of facts that are presented kind of thing. So it kind of, I'm not explaining it well. I'm really good at explaining things.
But I think people don't realize that sites like CNN and Fox have opinion people like Tucker Carlson and Anderson Cooper. Like, those are opinion reporters. They are paid to say their quote opinion, and they're not, that's different than, you know, the Channel 3 News at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Who are not paid to report their opinions.
There is a spectrum of news.
Yes.
Like everything else in the world.
Yes. All right. So should we take a break and we'll be back with our guest?
Let's do it.
This episode is sponsored by Regency Centers.
The Willow Shopping Center in Concord, California is a sprawling power center located off Freeway 680 in the East Bay, with a robust lineup of retail eateries, services, and fitness, including Old Navy, REI, and a UFC gym. Relax in the spacious outdoor patios, which sounds perfect right now for social distancing, and integrated seating areas along with lush landscaping and nature-inspired accent.
Willow Shopping Center is part of the local community. Its retailers and culture reflect the lifestyle needs of the neighborhoods that surround the center.
I love that Regency Centers always takes into account the demographic of the people around them so that the stores that they offer in each center really reflect the needs of the community. In addition to the Willow Shopping Center in Concord, Regency Centers has 28 other local area shopping centers to meet all your essential shopping needs. Visit regencycenters.com to find a shopping center nearest you.
Okay, we are back from our break and we have Jennifer Sullivan with us. Jennifer just started. Well, actually, you know what? I'm going to let her explain it because she'll do a much better job than I will. Hey, Jen, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, of course. We're so excited you're here with us. So you just started The Middle. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So The Middle is a new news outlet, basically that aims to provide understanding and seek common ground. And our main mantra is that we basically never want to place the agendas of our staff or our writers above the people's right to be informed.
I love that. I think just to have that be a clear mission for anybody reporting information right now is just so refreshing.
Yeah, it's very needed at the moment.
Yes. So what do you think the media's responsibility in a democracy is?
So the media's main responsibility, in short, is to ensure an informed electorate. You know, I think right now the media seems to be all too willing to actively push certain agendas. And the only agenda should be the dissemination of information that's fair, that's balanced, and that leads to a more engaged and a more knowledgeable citizenry.
And we've really seen that shift over, I mean, especially the last 4 years, but I would say even more. It started like within the last like 6 to 7 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, truth and fact are under attack right now. And that's why it becomes incumbent upon us to stand up and use our voices in opposition to fight back against those lies and that misinformation and drown the lies and the misinformation out with truth and fact.
What, in your opinion, what has given the rise to this need to lie?
So there has been a rise in radicalism and extremism in this country. Thanks to the advent of social media, it's very easy for a lot of people to get together and engage in a sharing of ideas that maybe wasn't so easy before. And that's both a good thing and a bad thing. And the thing is, you know, as more and more people become radicalized, we're seeing more and more news sources pop up in order to satiate that need. And so it sort of just acts as a feedback loop and basically a vicious cycle where these people are seeking increasingly radicalized news, and the news is then giving them that information that they seek, which only serves as a confirmation bias for them. So, you know, it's problematic, and that's one of the reasons, amongst many, why I started The Middle, was to attempt to sort of fight back against that.
I love that. I think a lot of people don't know how to keep their emotion. I'm guilty of this 100%. Keep their emotions and the real facts separate. And I think that just feeds into the confirmation bias too. You get that hit of emotion, like, see, I knew it. I knew it was this bad. And then it just...
For sure. And it's incredibly easy to fall into that cycle. And, you know, I think when I started The Middle, I made a promise, and I'm committed to honoring that promise. And that promise was to be fair and balanced. And that's not always easy at times. You know, I'll give an example. Last week, I was writing an article on Ted Cruz and the increasingly loud calls for Ted Cruz to be expelled from Congress. And if we're being frank, I'm not Ted Cruz's biggest fan, and I would love to see him no longer be in Congress, because the truth of the matter is, I think he places his interests and his party's interests above the interests of the nation, and for that reason, I don't think that he's capable of being an effective representative for his constituents, and so I would love to see him gone, but as I was looking through the history and I was examining, you know, past precedent, all the list of senators that had been expelled in the past, and I was examining the type of behaviors that got them expelled, and basically, you know, what kind of actions you need to gauge in to rise to the level that warrants expulsion, I couldn't fairly come to the conclusion that Ted Cruz should be expelled. You know, I said that he should be voted out of the ballot box resoundingly, and I think that censure is appropriate, but based on the precedent, I didn't think that expulsion was a fair conclusion. Did it pain me to come to that conclusion? Absolutely. Was I a little bit concerned that some of my readers would not be okay with that conclusion? Yes. But to cycle back, it all comes down to making a promise and honoring that promise. And I made a promise to be fair and balanced and to operate not on emotion, but based on history and reason. And that's exactly what I'm going to do.
It's funny you mentioned that article because I just read that and I was mad. I was like, why would she say that? Jen is one of the smartest people I know. She's educated. She's a lawyer. She knows how to like sort through this case history and all these things. And, but then I realized, you know, that your reasoning, the way you laid it out, that is fair. That does make sense. It scares me to let the constituents decide again at the ballot box because they have not decided well over all these last elections.
Totally agree with that. But at the end of the day, no matter what my personal opinion is, everyone is good. That's the beauty and the danger of, you know, I mean, everyone is free to make their own decisions. People know who Ted Cruz is. They voted him in. We have to respect that decision. There are, you know, instances that would rise to a level that would warrant expulsion. You know, if he were to say, have given aid or comfort to the insurrectionists, then I would 100% argue for his expulsion. But, you know, questioning the results as he did and challenging the results as he did, based on the precedent, I couldn't conclude that. And that is hard. And I'm not going to pretend that it's not. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think that that's what's needed. I think that it's important to place, you know, the interests of the nation above your own personal agendas. And that's what I've set out to do. And that's what I hope that I'm doing so far.
Well, and I like what you said, that that's your opinion based on the information you have right now. And I think we're stuck in this place where everybody must make this hard and fast black and white stance on everything, and to go back on that and change your mind after being given new information is recanting, or it's weak, or you're lying, or, and because I have heard that there is an investigation under or on Ted Cruz still,
right, with
the senator whose name I cannot remember, who is
Sheldon Whitehouse.
Yes. No, it was a different one. The one who was talking to Giuliani.
I'm sorry. The Republican senator.
Yes.
There were a few, oh goodness.
I know they all kind Biggs. Of blend together for me.
I think Biggs. Yeah, but no, I know exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, Sheldon Whitehouse was the one that issued a complaint in the House requesting that investigation into the full nature and extent of Cruz and other senators and House reps involvement.
Yeah, so there is still a chance that he could be implicated, or, you know, we're still gathering more information. So I think
for sure
to leave that door open is wise right now.
And that's another reason why I started the middle, is because right now I think there's such a lack of nuance in our national discussion. Everything is very black and white, and it can't be that way. You know, I think, you know, Heather, we've had this conversation before when it comes to police brutality. You know, it can't be either all cops are heroes or all cops are bastards. I'm sorry, can I say bastards?
Oh, yeah, say whatever you want.
But it can't be like ACAB or all cops are heroes. There has to be a level of nuance that says, hey, there are tons of cops that are heroes and they go to work every day risking their lives for their for the citizens and their community. But then there are also cops that aren't so great, and they seek to prey upon a system that has historically been stacked against certain subsets of our population. And I think being able to allow for both truths is incredibly important, because both things are true. And if you're not acknowledging that, again, you're pushing an agenda instead of giving the citizenry all of the information that they need to make their own conclusions.
Absolutely. And you honestly are one of the first people that ever challenged my views on that. And it really opened my eyes, that because I was operating from this place of black and white, this is my husband's job. If he was in that position, this is how I would feel. And that was what was echoed throughout his coworkers' wives, you know, the community. And we were also getting that feedback from people around us that weren't associated with law enforcement. He would be in a Starbucks in uniform, and people would come up to him and say, thank you, you're doing the Lord's work. And And we would just kind of like laugh.
True.
Because
no, but it's true. I mean, it's police officers are incredibly important. And I have thought multiple times about becoming an officer myself. I've looked it up in like 3 different cities that I've lived in because I think that they do such a valuable and important job. But, you know, at the same time, no profession doesn't have bad apples. And what's more, it's not just bad apples, but sometimes a system is set up in such a way purposefully that even the good apples get sucked into, you know, problematic systems. And so I think it's important for us to look at that with clear eyes. And sometimes it's hard when, especially when we're emotionally involved, it's an incredibly hard thing to do. But I think that it's important to try to take a step back and try to see all sides of an issue, because it's only when we see all sides of an issue that we can best come to a conclusion and move forward.
Absolutely. Well, and I was listening to Pantsuit Politics a couple weeks ago, and they made this point about the armed forces, that just because you're in uniform doesn't mean that we have this belief that you can inherently trust them. And I think, I think that applies to law enforcement as well, that just because we'd like to think that they've been vetted and background checked and all these things, but when you've been on the job for 10, 15, 20 years, opinions change, people radicalize. And I think, I think especially as a white woman, I think I have been taught to inherently trust someone in a uniform, and you can't.
For sure. And you know, that was just not to be repetitive, but that was another reason why I started the middle, was because, you know, I grew up wanting for nothing. And as a straight white woman, I've had a lot of privileges in my life. And that kind of comfort can breed complacency. You know, it's the reason why for a very long time, I wasn't actively engaged in politics and the news, because it was easy for me not to. You know, I was fortunate enough not to have to be. And so one of the reasons why I started the middle was not just to relay the news, but to talk about why we should care, because I don't think that we do that enough. You know, don't just mention, for example, the racial wealth gap in passing. Let's talk about why there's a racial wealth gap. Where does that come from? What are the byproducts of it? And how does it stand to affect our peers? You know, we need to start making news more personal so that more people have a vested interest. You know, it's very easy when you don't have any of your freedoms challenged, you know, day to day. And I never felt that I did. It's very easy not to feel like you have to get involved. But the truth is, it's only when those who aren't affected become as angry and as involved as those who are affected that change is actually effectuated. You know, it requires the people that aren't oppressed to march side by side, hand in hand with those who are oppressed in order to effectuate change. And I learned that, you know, as I grew older, and I think also becoming a mom, you know, you become a mom and a lot of things change because you realize that politics touches every single aspect of our lives. And, you know, I might be straight, but my child might be of a different sexual orientation or gender identity. And, you know, what if they grew up with these discriminatory policies in place? You know, everybody has to deal with the climate. You know, what about the environment that our children grow up in? You know, what about the debt and the deficit? Is the value of our dollar, is that going to be, you know, what's that going to be like when our children are older? And I think when you have children, it shouldn't take children. You know, you should come to these conclusions sooner because your peers, you know, these are our peers that we're talking about that are affected. But I think when you do have children, it just drives it home a little bit more.
Yeah, I love that you touched on the being a mom part, because we've gotten a lot of, especially over the last year, a lot of, I'll say, messages that we shouldn't talk about politics, we should stay in our lane, stick to mom stuff. And our answer is always, well, number one, like, unfollow us if that's not what you want to see. But number two, motherhood is political, and everything we do, and we're raising this next generation of kids who is going to grow up in this world that we are creating for them, something I don't think boomers really thought about, to be honest. like conveying that to people who think this way is really hard.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I see it all the time when, you know, if I see like a scary mommy article, they're saying the same things over there. You know, they're saying, you know, why are you talking about politics? You know, stick to motherhood stuff. But they're inextricably intertwined. You know, then we're raising the next generation of people that are going to set policy, that are going to be affected by policy. And it's important that we make ourselves informed so that we raise informed children.
You guys, I have to say, I'm very hopeful. It's happening. And it's so just a funny anecdote to show you that the change is happening, and it's not as a result of direct conversations we're having. So Isla decided that our bathroom needed a sign on it, like, you know, like the blue and white stick figure sign. And she drew the unisex bathroom.
Uh-oh.
That's more common now, you know, it's not like men and women, it's the unisex bathroom. And yeah. It was just so striking to me that she, that that's her visual of the world that she's seeing everywhere now. That's what a bathroom looks like. It's not, it's inclusive. It's for everyone. And it just showed me like these things, even though I haven't sat down and had a conversation with her about like, this is why we have bathrooms like this. And it's just these symbols that she's taking in subconsciously. And like, that's what they're growing up with. And that's the world that they're going to create. And it's just, it was just such a simple, like silly thing, because they're constantly plastering my walls with their artwork. But it was just so like, okay, like this is happening. Like we're doing this. Like this is, it's working.
And that's great. And that's why, like, I hope that our children grow up in a very different world than we did, because it's so touching that our children are going to grow up in a world where they're like, okay, unisex bathrooms, that's normal. A woman vice president, that's normal. You know, if Pete Buttigieg is confirmed to be transportation secretary, an openly gay cabinet member, that's normal. Like,
I have chills.
You know, and I am so happy. You know, obviously we have a very long way to go. A very long way, but I am very encouraged by what I am seeing right now, and I'm hopeful for the future.
Same. And I think if the generation between us and our kids, Gen Z, has anything to say about it, it's going to be scorched earth before our kids hit adulthood. And
oh, for sure. I don't think I've ever been more inspired than I was in the wake of the Parkland shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, because the way that those kids rose up together, you know, I nothing has ever touched me more. Their strength, their resolve. I mean, it was truly something, and that generation is going to do great things.
You live near that school, correct?
Yeah, we live about 20 minutes away. Oh, wow. So it was, I will never forget, you know, that morning. It's like one of those things where were you when this happened? You know, I'll never forget where I was when Princess Diana died. And I'll never forget, you know, that morning just waking up, because it hit so close to home. And I just kept thinking, you know, what if that were my children, you know, in that school? And it's, you know, it's tough. I mean, we're gun owners, but that doesn't mean that I don't think there should be common sense gun legislation. And again, that just, it goes back to the middle. You can be a gun owner and still think that we need to do more to protect our country's citizens.
That's funny. I was just having this conversation with my husband the other day, because we passed a car that had an NRA sticker, and I made a comment about a stereotypical gun owner, and he likes to devil's advocate me and goes, oh, what does that mean? And I said, well, you know, and so we got to talking. I said, you know, there is a difference between being a gun owner and being somebody who announces they're a gun owner.
Yeah. And also being involved with the NRA. I mean, as we're learning more and more, the NRA is, you know, they're not the most ethical of organizations. And I don't think that their interests are really gun owners. I think they're more concerned with profits than they are the people. And so I think that you can be a gun owner who isn't on board with the NRA. And, you know, it just goes back to understanding that there's nuance in every situation. You know, it's not all gun owners feel this way, or all Democrats are against guns, or, you know, whatever lines people like to say. You know, it's about establishing that common ground and finding common understanding and then moving forward on that basis.
So what news sources do you read religiously?
The middle? No, I'm kidding. Well, I'm not kidding, but I like to read. I like to read a variety. You know, I read historically nonpartisan sources like Reuters, the AP, BBC. I also read sources that have maybe like a center left or center right bent, like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, respectively. But I just like to consume a wide variety of perspectives because I feel like that allows me to more effectively hone in on the truth.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I think it goes back to the echo chamber and only seeing what you want to see. And that's exactly what social media does.
For sure.
So how do you think we course correct from some of these more extreme news outlets? I'm thinking of the Newsmax, the OAN, the ones where Fox News just wasn't enough and they needed more. And do we even need to course correct? Is this like a free market situation where we let it work itself out?
Yeah, so I don't know that we need to course correct or control or, you know, whatever verbiage you want to use. I'm a big advocate of freedom of speech and freedom of the press. I think that those two tenets are, you know, they serve as the bedrock of any functioning democracy. At the same time, I think that some of these outlets, their reporting, their style of journalism can be incredibly damaging. I don't really seek to control their voice, but rather to amplify our voices in return, to use our voices to combat lies and misinformation and to drown out that lie and that misinformation with the truth and the fact. And I think that we need to be louder and more insistent in standing up for justice and for integrity. And I'm encouraged that, you know, some people on both sides of the aisle are doing that, are standing for what is right. Because I think that Alexander Vindman said it best when he said, "Here, right matters," because it's only when we place doing the right thing above personal profits that we'll be able to truly thrive as a nation. And so I think it's less about controlling or, you know, correcting other people's speech and instead rising up together to drown out that speech with speech that is more closely aligned with truth and fact.
So how would you suggest doing that? So I'm thinking of, I know so many friends who's boomer parents are, you know, that's their only source. They refuse to listen to anything else. That's, they believe it. I mean, how do you, in a situation like that, how do you drown that out when they just think you're just some liberal who doesn't know anything?
I think we just need to be willing to engage and to engage in good faith. You know, one thing, if, you know, anyone who follows me on social media and sees my interactions with people, you know, and I'm not at all suggesting that I'm perfect because I'm not, and I make mistakes just like everybody else. But, you know, one thing that I try to do is I try to engage in honest conversations that don't seek to demonize the other side, but to establish understanding and find common ground. You know, there was once upon a time when I would go into a conversation just seeking to impart my wisdom upon the other party, and it shouldn't work like that. You know, I think if we go into a conversation not just seeking to talk, but to listen and to truly understand what the other person is saying, then we can actually engage in a dialogue that is effective and moves the conversation forward, as opposed to just, you know, yapping at each other from other sides. And I think that a lot of that comes down to understanding that we're not enemies. We have more in common than we don't. And I think that we need to get back to unifying our country rather than dividing it. You know, I think it's so easy to forfeit our humanity at the feet of political zealotry. And I think that we need to reestablish that humanity and say, this is my fellow man that's on the opposite side, or woman that's on the opposite side of this conversation. And I want to engage with them in good faith. And you know what? They might change my mind about something too. You know, I've had my mind changed about things when I didn't think that I was going to. And I'm so glad that I opened my mind up to that possibility. And so if two people go into a conversation and you're both open-minded, you're both operating in good faith, and you're both extending respect unto the other person, I think that we can, you know, cover a lot of ground.
And I've seen you do this so many times on social media, and you do it so well. There's so many times I'm reading through these comments and like, why is she even giving this person the time of day? But, and you do it so well. And it's certainly something I am conscious of myself. I know I'm not good at that. I'm trying. It's very hard when they're offering.
I'm not going to pretend that it's not difficult. I mean, behind the screen on this end over here, I mean, talking to my husband and being like, why won't this person understand? And I'm like, you know, shaking my fists and yelling at a cloud and I'm all angry. But like, you know, nothing gets accomplished that way. I see some of my friends and they're passionate and I admire that passion. I'm passionate too. But I see them when they take that passion and that passion is expressed in the form of anger and people shut off. It doesn't matter what the subject, it doesn't matter if you're right or wrong. People are going to shut off if you approach them with anger. And so I think the best thing that we can do is take a second, compose ourselves and come back at the conversation with more understanding and trying to come together as opposed to, you know, staying apart.
What's that quote about we have to be careful not to become the monsters we're fighting or something like that?
Yes, absolutely.
I think this is really hard for me because it's not something I grew up with, like having civil discourse. It was like pure anger when everybody fought. And I think that comes also from our grandparents' generation where it's like rude to talk about politics or, you know, it just wasn't talked about. So I'm really encouraged that millennials are starting to do this. We're starting to figure it out, even though it's hard. And then our kids' generation it just gives me so much hope.
Me too. I think we're definitely making progress. And, you know, I never understood that whole idea, like, you know, oh, you shouldn't talk about politics. You know, like we were saying earlier, politics touches every aspect of our lives. And I think politics can inform you a lot about a person, you know, how someone feels on different matters. Like, I think that speaks to their personality, to their values. And I've never understood why it was so off limits. It's something that we need to talk about, because if we don't talk about it, that's how people get stuck in their echo chambers. And that's how people become radicalized. And I think that's why we're so divided today, because we stopped talking about it except amongst like-minded people. And now we're on opposite sides of the room, like a middle school dance. And we just need to like come together and dance it out.
Let me tell you from personal experience, when you aren't allowed to talk about anything political, all you got left is the weather.
And that's boring.
It is. And for me, I'm the type of person that if I can't, like, I don't want to talk about surface level things with you. I want to have like deep, meaningful conversations. And if I can't do that with you, then you serve no purpose to me. And so I don't want to spend my precious energy socializing with you, because that's really exhausting to me to find 8 different ways to talk about the weather.
Yeah. No, I mean, I enjoy talking about these things because they're substantive. That doesn't mean that I don't talk about non-substantive things.
Don't get me wrong. I'll talk about Housewives all day.
Yeah. And I'll talk, The Bachelor, college football. Those are my passions too. but you know, these things are important to talk about. And I think when we get used to not talking about them, we relegate them to some like taboo recesses of our mind, when really they should be front and center, because they are what guide our present day reality and our future reality.
So now that you are writing for the middle, how are you balancing this 24-hour news cycle? I mean, obviously you want to know everything so that when you're writing your articles, you are informed, but you can't be drinking out of that fire hose all the time. How are you balancing it all?
It's exhausting. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I started out doing these news summaries for my friends on Facebook. And when people weren't paying me to do it, it was one thing, because I could just do it when I felt like it or not do it, and it was fine. Now that I have people paying me to do this, I have a responsibility to them. And so it's no longer something that I want to do. It's something that I have to do, which necessarily makes it, you know, a little bit more stressful. So, you know, I am sitting here and I'm constantly, constantly consuming, whether I'm consuming, you know, talk radio, or I'm consuming articles on the web, or I'm watching, you know, different shows on television. My life right now is 24/7 news, and that can get a bit much, you know, and that's why I started The Middle, because, you know, we're moms. We don't have an abundance of free time. So when we do get those rare spare moments, you know, we don't want to spend it synthesizing long form articles across numerous different outlets just so we can get like a little bit of clarity. You know, we want something that's fair, that's balanced, that's, you know, that's been summarized for us, and we want it all in one place. And so that's why I started The Middle, for everyone else's benefit. But yeah, that drives me a little bit crazy now. But the thing is, you know, you just have to get up and take a break. You know, if I'm feeling overwhelmed by the sheer volume of information in front of me, I'll just grab my new puppy and I'll take her for a walk and, you know, just clear my head, maybe do something mindless for, you know, 30 minutes. And just that little break recharges me and allows me to keep going. I've also discovered espresso, which is like a drug. So that's also very helpful.
Is it just you writing all the articles, or do you have a team?
No, it's just me right now. So I basically drop the kids off at 7:30 at the bus and then immediately start writing. And by the time I'm done, it's usually like not till like 6:30 at night. So it's been a lot right now. I do have some people that have volunteered to write different op-eds for me, and I have a couple of those in the works. So on the days when those run, then I won't feel quite as much pressure to put out content of my own. But I do want to make sure that our subscribers are getting their money's worth and that they're feeling valued. So, you know, I'm looking to put out at least 5 articles per week, you know, often probably more.
Wow.
I love it.
Well, take care of yourself, because that is that's a lot.
Hey, there's always wine. So
yeah, which, so, and I want those opinion pieces.
Oh, you know what? Maybe I'll have like a weekly column where I wake up in the morning, start drinking wine, and then just give you my unadulterated thoughts.
Yes, I love that.
I want that.
That's actually like probably one of the better ideas. Yeah. So thank you, Heather. You are now in charge of my marketing.
Oh my God. Hey, that's going to sell itself. All right. Well, Jen, why don't you tell everybody where they can find you?
So if you guys want to subscribe to The Middle, our website is themiddle.press. And you can also find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our names on all of those are The Middle Press as well. And then if you want to follow me personally on Twitter, I'm J. U-R-S, Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. And I'll be sharing a lot of news. And I also share a lot of videos of animals for some reason.
I'm going to say, like Sharon says so. Do you follow her on Instagram?
Mm-hmm.
She does the whales. So you
yes.
Have, everyone has their own version.
I just love it. Like, I think that's another like antidote to, you know, the nonstop stream of news is just like looking at really cute videos of animals. It breaks up the day and it injects a little bit of positivity, because, you know, news by its very nature necessarily affects either like a positive or a negative bend. And all too often it's negative. So it can be really overwhelming. And so I think the way we make it through is with videos of animals.
Nice little serotonin shot.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much, Jen.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really great to talk to you guys.
If you like what you just heard, and we hope you do, you can find more of us online at www.okayestmoms.com. We're also on all social media platforms, Pinterest, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at Okayest Moms Blog. Or if you want to, you can send us an email at hey@okayestmoms.com.